Trainer Talks and Tales acknowledges the traditional owners and custodians of the land in which we're recording this podcast, the Turrbal and Yugara people of Meanjin. We pay our respects to the elders past and present and extend our respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today.
Trainer Talks and Tales love having an array of guests with a variety of opinions. However, the views of the individuals do not necessarily reflect the perspectives of the host facilities.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talks and Tales. You are joined by Daisy and Tess, your co-hosts of the podcast. Now, today we are going to get into an awesome chat with Kayla, and Kayla actually works at Lone Pine Koala Sanctuary. But before we get into that, Daisy, do you want to tell us a little bit about you? What's been happening with you?
Yes, so excited for this episode. My week has been good. We went camping together, which was so much fun. We had the most beautiful weather and just got to hang out with all maybe 8-9 dogs that we had with us and a few children and lots of people, lots of food. So I feel like that was really relaxing. I really switched off on that weekend, which was nice. And I'm heading into Stanthorpe for a couple of days tomorrow. So I'm just out and about at the moment. So I haven't really been at work. I've been a bit busy holidaying, but work has been good. It's quieted down a lot, which has been nice. So I've been focusing in on some training and a couple of penguin projects, which has been good. So yeah, short and sweet for me. How about you, Tess? How's your week been?
Yeah, really good. I love camping too. I think it is always very wholesome and makes you really feel like you're living life when you go camping. But yeah, dogs camping, chaos, absolute chaos. Dogs and children. Yeah. Mine snuck out of the tent at 3 a.m. So anyway.
Oh, so, we forgive you, Louie. You're so cute.
They keep us on our toes. But yeah, that's about it from me. I'm really excited to talk about this episode because it is with my good friend Kayla. She is the head of education at Lone Pine Koala Sanctuary, and I've actually known her for about 10 years now. And she speaks so eloquently and passionately about education. And education in zoos is basically what we're here for. So let's get into this episode.
Let's do it.
Well, first of all, Kayla, thank you so much for joining us. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on Train Talks and Tales.
No worries. Thanks, Tess and Daisy. It's a pleasure to be here.
We had a bit of a rocky start with our classic Zoom log on and, Tess has no pants on and all that stuff, but we got there. So
my husband coming in to try to sort it out, also not having pants on. It's been great. Great start.
I feel like the odd one out wearing pants.
Now, what are you doing?
Very professional at Train Talks and Tales. Well, not sure if you've listened to an episode before, but we do always start with our fast five. Are you okay if we get into that serious fast five before the big hard-hitting questions?
I was not prepared for this, but hit me. Let's do it. I guess you can't prepare.
That definitely means you haven't listened to our Trainer Talks and Tales episodes, but that's fine. We'll glide past that. Okay, number one, orange juice or apple juice?
If it's fresh squeezed, like fresh squeezed orange juice, otherwise apple juice.
Okay, this is fast five, so fast as you can.
Okay, I got it. I'll pick it up.
Cheese board or cheesecake?
Oh, cheese board every day.
Fantasy book or murder mystery?
Murder mystery.
S'mores or PB&J?
PB&J. It's un-American of me. But, actually, they're both pretty American. PB&J.
They're both very American.
Yes.
Never go camping again or never sit in a jacuzzi again?
Tess. And this is
a favorite thing.
You know these are my two favorite things. I think I'd have to forego the jacuzzi because I feel like not camping ever again just makes me really sad. So yeah, sorry, Koo's life.
good answers. I think you answered them well. Well done.
Thanks.
I remember I was really excited about my wedding and I asked if you'd book your accommodation. You're like, yeah, I've got a jacuzzi. So I've always known that's your favorite thing.
Yeah, I just had a trip. My sister came to visit, and we got a jacuzzi. We got an Airbnb with a jacuzzi. So, yeah, I plan trips around jacuzzis if I can.
Me too. All right. Well, now that we've got that sorted, let's get into the chat. Obviously, I've worked with you for a long time and you have been such a pleasure to work with, but you've actually been in the industry for a long time. So not just Lone Pine, for over 15 years. You're originally from the US and you worked at the incredible San Diego Zoo. And now you're the head of education at Lone Pine Koala Sanctuary. And you have been the head of education for a number of years. But do you mind telling us a little bit more about your career pathway and how you got into the zoo industry?
Yeah, absolutely. I had to crunch some numbers before, and it's actually been, over 15 years. 18. How did that even happen? I know, crazy. I wasn't like some people have just always known that, you know, working in the zoo industry from the time they were little. Tess, I'm looking at you. This is like what I want to do, and I'm going to do whatever it takes to get into it. I had no clue what I wanted to do when I went to university, and I was studying a degree in English literature, which has proven very useful. But I was tutoring on the side to make a little extra coin. And I was tutoring a woman whose her daughter worked at the, she worked at the San Diego Zoo, and I was tutoring her daughter. She was a keeper there. And she told me about a internship that they had in their education department. So I started doing that while I was going to university. And then I was also working at a science center doing like science experiments with kids on the side. And yeah, it just sort of clicked. I kind of thought I wanted to go into teaching, but I love the outdoors and I've always loved wildlife. So then when I realized there's a career path where I could do both, it just sort of made sense. And yeah, I did spend some time. I went and did some teaching overseas for a while, and then came back to the San Diego Zoo. And then when I moved to Australia, I got a job at Lone Pine, and that was it.
That's so cool. I love that you San Diego. That's such an amazing like opportunity to be able to work there. I did not realize it.
Yeah, I think I was pretty lucky to get my start there because it's such a well-known, like reputable zoo. I think having that be my first experience kind of set me up pretty well. It is a really cool place to have been able to work.
Yeah, I remember when you started and you're like, oh, I was at San Diego Zoo. Everyone's like, wow, like that's so exciting. And yeah, you just brought this very new and exciting energy when you came to Lone Pine, and you still have that. So
I was gonna say, I hope I still have exciting energy.
No, you do. Thank you. We're very lucky to have taken you basically from the US.
Kayla, we love like really chatting. Like, I guess on our podcast, we talk a lot to trainers and keepers. That's kind of our main focus on the podcast. So it's actually lovely and like really nice to take a bit of a broader look at some of the different roles that come forward in our industry. And, you know, without a doubt, one of the most important roles of our job is to be able to educate people. So do you mind maybe telling us a little bit more about what sort of your role looks like at Lone Pine? I'd love to know a little bit more about what you get up to.
Yeah, absolutely. My role has changed a lot. I've actually been at Lone Pine, it'll be 10 years next month. So I started out just as in the education team as an education officer. For a while, I did a stint as the health and safety officer or advisor. But now, yeah, then I've been now the education manager for, gosh, I think it's been like 4 years. I started before COVID. So yeah, my role has changed. I don't get to do quite as many like actually running of programs as I used to, because I spend a bit more time looking after the behind the scenes things like the bookings and the rostering and our kind of more strategic planning and all of that. But I still make an effort to go out and run tours and run programs because that fills my cup in a big way. So it's very dynamic. We do lots of different things. We run school programs. We have up to like 200 kids a day that can come and visit. And then we also run tours as well. So you might be teaching a class to a group of prep students in the morning and then have a break and then run a tour for a group of international visitors in the afternoon and then finish up with like a behind the scenes platypus tour. So the day can really just be very, very different. And I think that's one of the things that just keeps it really interesting. And then sometimes new interesting opportunities come up and you get to like make a new program for someone. So yeah, it's very, very different. But these days, unfortunately, if I'm going to be perfectly honest, I answer a lot of emails. That's like, it's really like most of my day.
I did appreciate, though, right before I went on maternity leave, I was like, Kayla, you and I, we're doing a school program and we're having a fun day with the kids, and you rostered yourself and me on, which was very fun. So I very much appreciated that.
Of course, Tess, I know it's been your dream for a long time to do the Junior Keeper program, and you absolutely crushed it, and I had a lovely day working with you.
Yeah, I would like to do that more. It was very, very fun. Mm. Now, obviously, you did say that there's a lot of different facets of your role, and you're going to be inside the office, outside running tours, and basically a lot of different things. But how do you explain the role of education within zoos? Is that something that you can touch on?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a big one.
It is.
And I'm pretty biased, obviously, but I think that education really should be integral to like the mission of a good zoo. I think it's something that if you're not prioritizing, then, you know, what are you doing? Zoos, the industry has changed a lot. People's expectations have changed. People come, you know, wanting to learn, maybe not being actively taught something, but they want to come away knowing more than they did when they went. So I think it's really, really important. I think there's a lot to say about just the benefits of connecting with nature. So that's just good for, you know, physical and mental health. So just connecting people to nature, that in a time when we spend so much time in our screens and at home and all of that. But I guess more, so that's kind of more like passively, just people coming to visit a zoo or an aquarium. But if we're talking about like active education, then I think it's about like fostering empathy and understanding in people, and ultimately creating like social change. So changing people's attitudes and behaviors and making more aware and responsible global citizens, which is kind of big, but really, I think that's really it. It's about educating people for the future and preserving the future for all of us.
I think we've got about 85 amazing.
Maybe it got heavy.
No, I think we just got about 85 amazing quotes out of you there. That was so good. That was amazing to hear.
I was going to say, it was a very loaded question, and you just launched with a great answer.
I hope it made sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely did. But like kind of following, I guess, on a little bit from that, and I know you touched on it briefly, but what do you think that zoos are offering in education, like in around that space, that kind of sets them apart from learning in a classroom, for example?
Yeah, I mean, for one thing, just being in that environment, we do a lot of our school group education outdoors. So you've got literally like kookaburras swooping down and water dragon lizards mating and fighting and running under people's feet. And like sometimes that can be challenging. But I also think that it creates like really this sense of wonder and adventure. So you get, you know, these kids that are already so stoked to be on an excursion. They're so happy to be outside of the classroom. And then your education officer rocks up in their khaki and they've got their props and they're ready to go. And the kids are like, yes, oh my gosh, I'm here for it. I'm ready. Let's learn. So yeah, you've got such a good opportunity to like harness that excitement. And then, you know, sprinkle in your little conservation education messaging. And yeah, you get to come in as like somebody new and fresh and exciting and create that narrative. So it can be difficult, you know, when there's like rain and wind and all of those things. But I also think there's a lot of opportunities and opportunities for learning.
Yeah, I really actually love from what you just said then about being in the environment and seeing like the khaki, the uniform, the animals around you. Almost feel, I think, like you're way more a part of what you're learning than seeing it from a distance and being in like a, you know, a standard room classroom where it can be quite hard to connect to the things that you're learning, where I can imagine it's so easy to do that when these animals that you're learning about are left, right, and center around you. The people that are looking after them are all around you. You're learning from people who are so passionate about it too. So I think that's such a good point and so valuable for children and teenagers to be able to get exposed to those things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we at Lone Pine, we have mostly native animals, and I'm always surprised how many even like local students just haven't seen a blue-tongued lizard or don't know what a rainbow lorikeet is. And these are animals that, you know, if they really went out and had a look around, they would find them, but they're just a bit disconnected. So we get to have that, yeah, that very real, very present connection and up close. And yeah, there's nothing really like it. No like VR or YouTube experience can really capture that, and you get the smells and the sounds, and yeah, it's a whole different thing.
I would like to say as well, I think that it's really important for you as education officers to realize what you guys are doing, because I still distinctly remember doing these programs at Currumbin when I was little, and like you said, like the gums, the keeper and the car key holding a snake and doing this program, and I still remember her name, I still remember everything she said, and they are actually life-changing moments. I know even for my husband Chris's sake, he said that those little moments that you have, he was like, yep, I have to work with animals, and you're inspiring these young people with these experiences. So a credit to you guys, because those encounters can really change people's lives.
Yeah, I like to think that we're, you know, igniting little sparks in little hearts, and yeah, hopefully making conservation ambassadors for the future.
Wow, you've just got a whole lot of one line.
Yeah, copyright that one, trademark it.
I'm like so inspired by every sentence that you say. I'm like, wow, she just keeps getting better.
Oh, I'm warming up.
So on that, as keepers, it's our job as well as education officers to educate the public on our animals through daily presentations, conversations that we're having quite casually as well after chats. What are some techniques that you use to deliver a conservation message or call to change with these tours and lessons that you provide? Something that maybe us as keepers can take away from what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very good question, because I think it's really easy to, get people like a bit bummed out or disengaged. There's so much at the moment. I think people are experiencing fatigue really around things like climate change and biodiversity loss, and it can be really overwhelming. So the main thing that you don't want to do is overwhelm people, because as soon as that happens, they're just going to check out. We only have so much empathy as humans. We can't take on all the problems in the world. So I think it's really important to keep that in mind, and also keep in mind like all the different barriers that people have in their lives to behavior change. You can't just tell someone like, oh yeah, you should set up a catio for your cat on their balcony because cats kill 2 billion animals a year in Australia. Like, not everyone has the ability to go out and buy those things and make a cat patio. And yeah, so I think I've learned a lot from some training I've done through Zoos Victoria with their Connect, Understand, Act behavior change model. There's heaps of resources and more about it online, but it's kind of about starting with the action that you want to achieve, and then fostering, like building a connection. So making it relevant for people and building that kind of warm, fuzzy heart feels, and then building understanding through information. And they talk a lot about barriers in that as well. I don't want to go on too much and I might be taking too much time, but there was one presentation that really stuck with me that they delivered. They had a school program where they were teaching kids about nest boxes and telling all the kids to go back to school and put up a nest box. And they had this whole awesome program and they ran it for ages. And then they called all the schools afterwards to see how many schools had put up a nest box, and none of them had, like zero of the of the students, none of them. And they were so proud of this program. They were like, yay, we're doing such good things. And they just realized that there were too many barriers and to, like, time and money and all of these things that they hadn't considered. So we've got to keep that in mind. And I think trying to frame things in a way that's like a bit more positive. So going back to the cat example, like cats are a big killer of native wildlife. But if you just tell people all of the facts about how many animals die from cats every year, they're just going to check out. They're going to be like, oh, it's not my cat doesn't do that. My cat would never. And they don't want to hear it. But if you frame it in a way that, hey, you know, keeping your cat indoors actually is better for them, they will live longer, they will be healthier, they will be happy, they can have a long, happy life indoors, they get to spend more time cuddling with you, you can play with them, like, you're going to have better outcomes approaching it that way, than just hitting people with, like, information overload. So I guess, like, choose your messaging wisely, pick, like, don't try to fit everything in, don't try to just one after another do this, narrow it down, hone it in, think about the barriers and make it kind of relevant and positive if you can. Yeah. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think there's some like really good tips and some really cool techniques that I think a lot of people listening will be able to take away. And actually listening to what you're saying, you know, I've never done education, but it's absolutely considered part of my role. And I guess Tess and I can maybe relate more to that. We do it in our presentations every day, and similar ways that you're telling and teaching techniques to educate children is kind of how we want to make sure we're portraying it through presentations as well. Because yes, at the end of the day, it would be fantastic to go out there for 15 minutes and be like, these are all the things that need fixing in conservation, this is all the stuff we need to do, but you're going to lose everyone so fast. So you have to make sure that it's maintained positive, it's achievable for people to be able to receive, and people don't like being told what to do. So that's something I've definitely learned. So I think a lot of what you said, that a lot of people listening that might not necessarily have been in education roles might be able to relate and hopefully use some of those techniques from doing things like presentations in their roles.
Yeah, absolutely. We're, you know, we're all educators, and, you know, we even the people that aren't taking like the tickets at the front entrance have a role in education. So I think it's the whole culture of wherever you're working, and everyone plays a part, and presentations are huge. You have a big audience right there, literally listening to your every word. So such a good opportunity to sneak some little things in.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I can only imagine that you deal with a huge variety of ages. So you're going to be dealing with, I'm sure, a lot of toddlers, international travelers, such a variety in between that. How do you adapt your dialogue, I guess, or what you're communicating to the people to make sure that you can still connect with such a different variety of audiences?
Yeah, that's a really great question. It's something that I really love about my job, that I get to work with all sorts of different people. And I love working with the people at work as much as the animals. Like, I think it's really, really fun. But you have to change and pivot and be flexible. You have to pick kind of back to your messaging. Like, I'm not going to talk to a group of toddlers about climate change and buying recycled toilet paper because they're toddlers and they're not buying anything. And So choosing your words and your messaging wisely. This sounds really, like, pretty cheesy, but what I try to do is, like, whatever my audience is I try to, like, meet them wherever they're at and approach them really as individuals. So if it's a group of toddlers, where they're at is they're going to want to play and explore and pick things up and have fun. And that's what I'm going to do too, where I'm going to, like, get into that mindset and just, you know, check in with my inner child and have fun. If I'm dealing with a group of, like, international business people who are here for a conference, then I'm going to try to put on my business hat and get into whatever they're interested in. And just realizing that, like, everyone visiting comes with their own experiences and their own stories. And I want to get to know them for whatever amount of time I'm with them, whether it's like a 20-minute encounter or a full day program. I'm going to try to build some little connection with them or find, like, something that is interesting. And a lot of times people want to share about themselves. And then once you can kind of show that interest in them, they're going to reciprocate and be interested in what you have to say, because they're, you know, you've made that little connection. So I just try to be a bit of a chameleon, and but a genuine chameleon, not just faking it. Like, I'm genuinely interested in people, and just have fun. And yeah, find out what they're interested in and go from there.
I honestly think that that's so true. You do connect with animals, and I've seen you train birds, and you have that skill, but you have so much experience and so much genuine interest in people, and that really comes across in your tours. And I do. I've seen you be a bush turkey, and I've seen you with the kids, and I was like, what's that sound? Oh, it's Kayla walking like a turkey, and a school group or like a little junior kids are following her, like scratching their legs, being turkeys. And Kayla has no inhibitions, and she's just having the best time of her life. And then I see her later in the day, and she's speaking to this group, and she's really portraying this conservation message and really connecting with these people. So you are very good at adapting to your audience, and I think that that's probably why you flourished in this role, because you do connect with people no matter where they've come from and their age. So credit to you, Kayla, you're very good at your job.
It's such a like unique skill to be able to have. Like, I think it is an amazing trait and skill, and like make you thrive in your job,
being a turkey.
That one especially.
Yeah, and I think the song you're talking about, Tess, is called Turkey on the Roof. It's a song that I made for a group of school kids. Yeah, it's a banger.
It's stuck with me for a decade. I honestly think you did it on your first week, and I was like, who is singing a song about Turkey on the Roof? It is Kayla. And
it's me.
Yeah.
Should we attach that to the episode?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, Kayla, what are some things a person could do to help them get involved, or if they're interested in doing something within the zoo education department?
So the main thing is that I look for, if I'm looking to hire somebody, is I like to see kind of a range of experiences. And obviously volunteering, I know that's one that probably a lot of people talk about. It's a good way to get your foot in the door and show that you have that genuine interest. Working in education is a lot of working with kids, so I do like to see that people have kind of demonstrated that they can work with kids, because that's something that's not for everybody, and that's fine. But you've got to be able to do Turkey on the Roof dance and be a bit silly and not be embarrassed and be comfortable in those situations. So other experience that I've actually found is really helpful is if people have experience doing like running any sort of kids programs, like dance schools or coaching, or like I ran this summer program, and just kind of demonstrating that you have that ability to manage a group of kids is really beneficial. Or even doing like vacation care work, just something that shows you've done that, in addition to like a demonstrated sort of passion for wildlife, whether that's working at a different zoo or sanctuary as a volunteer, or working as an animal shelter or doing like a conservation project through uni. Those are kind of the two things that I think can be helpful to just get a start.
Yeah, I think those things make a lot of sense. And if people can get skills in those areas, or really reflect on whether they do love working with kids, would be a great start for sure. Now,
Tess, when you first answered that question, you were like, oh, we also look for experience with people who have got experience in running. And then you paused, and I was like, literally racking my brain thinking, why on earth do I need to know how to run? And I was like, are these kids psycho? Like,
in case you need to get away, you got to get away from them, baby. Like,
how weird. And I was like, oh, that makes sense.
No, I had the same thought.
Okay, good.
Pause.
Yeah, the pause. The dramatic
Did I pause.
Pause,
or was it like a technology glitch?
Probably the technology.
Hello. It's
running group, running programs, not running away from children.
Oh, so good. Anyway, well, speaking about running children, one of my favorite things is seeing the quotes that your education team will write up on the staff whiteboard after the school holidays. So we have a junior keeper program, and obviously kids can be a keeper for a day at Lone Pine, and kids being kids say the darndest things. Can you share some of your most memorable quotes?
Oh man, we haven't done that in a little while. I want to bring it back because they just come up with the zaniest things. One that stuck with me, I can't remember what the actual quote was, but it was when one of the little kids who was like maybe 6 years old was trying to set up one of my education officers, Nick, with his mom, and being like, my mom's single. Do you want to be my dad?
Oh my God.
And Nick was like, what?
I'm sure she's a lovely lady.
Like, I'm flattered, but I'm sure that the mom would have just been like mortified to know that their kid is trying to set them up. And another memorable, it's not really a quote, it's like a thing that happened ages ago when I first started. I was doing a school program and I was talking about how koalas have two thumbs. And then all the kids in the class got really excited and they were like, oh, James has two thumbs also. And I was like, okay, they're just kids. They're just being a bit like a bit silly. And I was like, okay, kids. And then this little kid stood up and he was so stoked and he held up his hand and he legitimately had like an extra thumb sticking out. He was so proud of it. Like he wasn't embarrassed.
Love that.
And all his little mates, all his little classmates were like super excited and they're like, yeah, like a koala. So I just thought that was really beautiful. They weren't like making fun of him for being, you know, a bit different. They were like, yeah, like a koala. So those are
embracing
two.
Embracing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's, I love that. That's so very good. I'm impressed.
I love the idea of like the whiteboard writing those down. That would be so fun to like look back on. It's so cute.
Yeah, I'm bringing that back. I'll bring it back in September for sure.
Yeah, even that day we had together, of course I can't remember it off the top of my head, but we'd been running the program for about 10 minutes and there was just one liner after one liner and you and I were just looking at each other like, it's going to be a good day. Like we're saying some very funny things.
Yeah.
So good.
They have a great little way of looking at the world.
Well, Kayla, to wrap up, we do have a question from our listeners. So excited to hear your response to this one, actually. Is there any space that you think for improvement in education departments within zoos?
Yes. Short answer is absolutely. I think that we collectively just need to move away from maybe education programs without like a greater purpose, or like just taking out animals for the sake of it. And just, you know, here's a lizard, here's a snake, here's this, here's some facts. Okay, have a good day, bye. I think it's important that, you know, the programs that we're running, we make sure that they do have objectives that are, you know, linked to something, whether it's linked to the Australian curriculum, just something that you're hoping to achieve. So that you're just going in, kind of, I guess, tying back to one of your first questions about the role of education in zoos. Keeping that always in mind, because yes, it is a fun day for kids to be out and about and we want them to have fun and we want them to have a good time. But it's also a real privilege to be able to educate them and have, you know, all of these amazing animals around us. So we've got to make the most of it. I hope that answers the question. Yeah. An area where, like, if I'm being perfectly honest, an area where I think we can do better at Lone Pine in education is evaluating our programs. That's a big one. And it takes, you know, a bit of time and we do a bit of it, but that's an area where I would like to grow, is you know, we have these objectives. How are we sure that we're actually reaching them?
No, that makes sense. That's like the nest box thing. Like you think that you're having this great message and then it's not really embodying any kind of change. But yeah, it's good to reflect. Absolutely. Well, Kayla, it has been so lovely to talk to you. I absolutely love working with you. You're vivacious, you're fun. Daisy messaged me during this and said, I love her, just randomly as we were texting. So
you're very fun. Stop it.
Very easy to talk to. So,
and so clearly like so passionate about education. So I really hope that, and well, actually I know that people are going to feel very inspired after listening to you as well.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And Tess, it's been a delight working with you for the past 10 years. Oh my goodness.
And please sign me up for some more education shifts when I'm back, please.
I got you. Practice your sing-alongs and we'll get some kid quotes and we'll have a great time.
I'll practice my turkey dance. Thank you again, and we'll talk to you soon.
That was so good. Kayla is so lovely. And honestly, I feel like I could listen to her all the time. I think I texted Tess and said that she could narrate a book because she's got such a beautiful voice. And like you said at the start of the episode, the education teams are so important. They're the backbone of what we do every day. So it's really great hearing a little bit more about their roles and how we can be effective communicators and educators in what we're doing as well.
Absolutely. And we said in the episode, she had a lot of like one-liners. So I think we're going to have a lot of quotes to make for our socials because she spoke very well.
Absolutely.
Anyway, that's it for this week. We hope you enjoyed the app. We'll be in your ears next week. Bye.
Bye.